It's April 17th, 2023. Welcome. It's Ward Green with you now. And it's 16:14 hours Eastern Daylight Time. This is Dr. Robert Cathcart III, the late Dr. Cathcart, speaking about the use of vitamin C.
You know, I think one of the great theories of medicine, you know, these quackbusters are considering, they're saying that we're not being scientific. Well, the way I learned the scientific method was that you did experiments and the facts should determine the theory, not the theory of the facts. I mean, I'm constantly having doctors tell me that vitamin C can't do this and that because of such and such, you see. Well, but the fact of the matter is that it does do it, so they should change their becauses because of this. Now, I've given over 30,000 patients massive doses of vitamin C since 1969, and we have just not seen any increase in cancer. And in fact, if anything, we've seen a decrease in cancer. So that if in vitro there are different studies that show this and that chemical may be changed, I'm not very impressed with that. I just really didn't pay much attention to that because it just didn't happen. See, that the fact should determine the theory. And the fact of the matter is that vitamin C is just simply not toxic.
Okay, that was very interesting. You notice he said about science, he was talking about how the facts should determine the theory. And there was something else there I wanted to talk about. What was it he said? Let's see if we can find that again.
And in fact, if anything, we've seen a decrease. 1,000 patients, massive dose, does do it. So they should change to this and that because of such and such. It's facts. I mean, I'm constantly having doctors tell me vitamin C.
Yeah, he said in vitro. I just wanted to clarify that in vitro means in a test tube or in glass. So when he says that there are certain doctors telling him that experiments have been done using vitamins in glass test tubes, he's not impressed with that because the results that he's seen are in vivo, or in the human body, in other words, rather than in vitro, which means in glass. And in vitro is just not a good enough indicator for what really happens in vivo, you know, is what he's saying. Or in real life, in other words. In real life, it's different. And he's not seen any of the problems that people are claiming happen because of their experiments that they've seen in glass test tubes, you know. Anyway, now, coming back to our article for today, again, Little Children, it's Wild Road. It's called Wild Road Ahead to History, and it's part 1, chapter 6. Today's study is paragraph 11. The date of Nimrod appears to be closely connected in timing to that of the post-diluvial kingdom of Egypt, in other words, after the deluge of Noah, and the dispersion of mankind during the period of the tower's construction at Babel, in Shinar, associated to Nimrod, to the early kings of Egypt. And this is founded upon associations of Nimrod to Osiris, Narmer, and Menes, the earliest of the Egyptian kings. The date of Nimrod appears to be closely connected in timing to post-diluvial Egypt and the dispersion of mankind is connected to the early kings of Egypt. Okay, this is founded upon associations of Nimrod to Osiris, Narmer, and Menes, the earliest of the Egyptian kings. So the name Narmer, for example, resembles Nimrod quite significantly. Now, the Sumerian king Enmerkar, there's another name that bears some resemblance to Nimrod, ruled at Uruk or Unug three reigns before Gilgamesh, who was a contemporary of Aga of Kish, according to the Epic of Gilgamesh. And it may be calculated from the reigns of Sumerian kings, as recorded on the Sumerian king list, when Aga and also Enmerkar ruled, provided that we know two things. One, we must know the starting point of the kings that preceded Aga, and two, the meaning of the word year, as there are kings ruling for as many as 1,200 years. In quotes, 1,200 years, that's what the numbers were that were recorded. When each year is taken to be one day in a lunar month of 29.530588 days, that's the length of an average lunar month. That's the length of the average of the lunar months, and or it's about 29.5, in other words. So we divide by 29.5 to convert each reign into a correspondingly new number, with all of the new reigns lasting less than 40 years. So, in other words, 1,200 years divided by one period of time equal to a lunar month, which is 29.5 days, gives 40 for the maximum, because 1,200 divided by 30, which is about the same as 29.5, 1,200 divided by 30 is 40, right? So most of these new reigns are going to be less than 40, because 1,200 was the maximum number given. So if we convert those years into lunar months instead, we get a new set of reigns in terms of reign lengths for the kings. The choice of 29.5 is that it's the only astronomical constant known on Earth that would be about this size. Two, second thing, we need to know the meaning of the word year, right? That was one thing. But the first thing was we have to know the starting point of the kings that preceded Aga. So we require a starting point for the calculations. We are blessed with the deluge date 3282 BCE in the Blessed Genealogy, or the BG, a date by God's grace given to us uniquely. The starting point we have is 3281 BCE. The end of the deluge in the BG, because it was a roughly one year long deluge starting in 3282 BCE, and the dates count backwards in the BCE years, so it's 3281. That'll be the starting point for these kings, as the earliest kings of Kish ruled, in quotes, after the flood, end quote, as the record appears to say. Although this is not strictly consistent with a global deluge and the ark landing in Turkey, because we don't see that there were kings on board the ark. I mean, it doesn't exactly fit with what we know about Noah's ark landing in Turkey. However, a later corruption of the record is possible, we assume. And when these years that were given, if it's the correct total number of years, we can calculate this, and it results in Enmerkar being dated as 2751 BCE year one. So that is an impressive result, because 2751 is very near to the time of the dispersion in 2745 BCE that we've already been talking about. It's very close to it. And the 2774 beginning of the Egyptian calendar, around about that time in BCE years also. It's near to that too. So this is quite important that we could obtain that number. But we did that because we didn't believe that humans lived as long as 1,200 years or ruled as kings for that long. So we just thought we had to change this list of kings in terms of, we didn't change anything else, just the length of time that each of them reigned. And we began their rulership in one year after the deluge, or right at the time of the landing of the ark, and so on. We allowed that when the earth dried off, that was when the king started to rule. So the first king on the list might have been Noah, but he might have been called by a different name on the king list. So because we don't have all the facts from many different sources, we just have a very few facts from very few sources, the best we could do was what we did, and we arrived at 2751 for En-Merkar, which he's very possibly the same person as Nimrod, too. Actually, or he could be the successor of Nimrod also. It's possible. But that's today's study for Wild Road and our proverb for today is from Proverbs 24:8. As for anyone scheming to do bad, he will be called a mere master at evil ideas. So, we can meditate on that one. And Genesis 48, today's reading from Genesis. We recall yesterday that Jacob, at the end of chapter 47, he made Joseph promise, he got Joseph to promise that he would bury Jacob's bones with Jacob's forefathers in the grave of his forefathers in the land of Canaan. And so at that time, Jacob was 147 years old, and also Joseph promised that he would do that for his father with regard to the burial of Jacob. And then Jacob was also known as Israel, of course. Israel then prostrated himself over the head of the couch. And it came about after these things that it was said to Joseph, "Look, your father is becoming weak." At that, he took with him his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. Then it was reported to Jacob and said, "Here your son Joseph has come to you." So Israel exerted his strength and sat up on his couch. And Jacob proceeded to say to Joseph, "God Almighty appeared to me at Luz in the land of Canaan, that he might bless me." And he went on to say to me, "Here I am making you fruitful, and I will make you many, and I will transform you into a congregation of people." Excuse me. Sorry, I know that's loud. "And I will give this land to your seed after you for a possession to time indefinite. And now your two sons who were born to you in the land of Egypt before I came here to you into Egypt, they are mine. Ephraim and Manasseh will become mine like Reuben and Simeon. But your progeny to which you shall become father after them will become yours. Together with the name of their brothers, they will be called in their inheritance. And as for me, when I was coming from Paddan, Rachel died alongside me in the land of Canaan on the way, while there was yet a good stretch of land before coming to Ephrath, so that I buried her there on the way to Ephrath, that is to say Bethlehem. Then Israel saw Joseph's sons and said, 'Who are these?' So Joseph said to his father, 'They are my sons, whom God has given me in this place.' At this he said, 'Bring them, please, to me, that I may bless them.' Now the eyes of Israel were dull from old age. He was unable to see. Accordingly, he brought them close to him, And he then kissed them and embraced them. And Israel went on to say to Joseph, I had no idea of seeing your face, but here God has let me see also your offspring. After that, Joseph brought them out away from his knees, and he bowed down with his face to the earth. Joseph now took the two of them, Ephraim by his right hand to Israel's left, and Manasseh by his left hand to Israel's right, and brought them close to him. However, Israel put out his right hand and placed it on Ephraim's head, although he was the younger, and his left hand upon Manasseh's head. He purposely laid his hand so, since Manasseh was the firstborn. And he proceeded to bless Joseph and to say, The true God before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac walked, the true God who has been shepherding me during all my existence until this day, the angel who has been recovering me from all calamity, bless the boys, and let my name be called upon them and the name of my fathers, Abraham and Isaac, and let them increase to a multitude in the midst of the earth. When Joseph saw that his father kept his right hand placed on Ephraim's head, it was displeasing to him, and he tried to take hold of his father's hand to remove it from Ephraim's head to Manasseh's head. Hence Joseph said to his father, Not so, my father, because this is the firstborn. Put your right hand on his head. But his father kept refusing and said, I know it, my son, I know it. He too will become a people, and he too will become great. But just the same, his younger brother will become greater than he will, and his offspring will become the full equivalent of nations. And he continued to bless them on that day, saying, By means of you, let Israel repeatedly pronounce blessings, saying, May God constitute you like Ephraim and like Manasseh. Thus he kept putting Ephraim before Manasseh. After that, Israel said to Joseph, Look, I am dying, but God will certainly continue with you people and return you to the land of your forefathers. As for me, I do give you one shoulder of land more than to your brothers, which I took from the hand of the Amorites by my sword and by my bow. And that's the end of Genesis chapter 48 and today's study. So it is, once again, April 17th, 2023, 1631 hours Eastern Daylight Time. I hope you enjoyed this study. Little children, I'm Ward Green. May God bless you, and may you also pray to him in the name of our anointed Savior Jesus. And in the meantime, on behalf of me, it's Liv Dusty and Moppy saying bye for now.